Welcome to the 294th episode of the 4th and 24 podcast with Patrick Winograd. I'm your host, Randy Winograd. In this edition of the podcast, our topics are reviewing Patrick's weekend predictions, a review of last week's college football bowl games, and a preview of the upcoming college football playoff games, a look back at week 17 action in the NFL, and a look back at the last week in college basketball and the last week in the NBA. Let's jump right in with a look back at Patrick's weekend predictions, which are posted every Thursday on our social media handles, 4th and 24. Starting in the NFL, where Patrick went 4-0 with his weekend predictions. We move to the NBA, where Patrick went 3-1 with his weekend predictions. And in college basketball, Patrick went 2-2 with his weekend predictions. That brings him to a grand total of 9-3 this week, and his overall record to 1,236 and 772. That's a 61.6% winning percentage. Patrick, your thoughts on your weekend predictions?
Well, I thought I had done a lot better, especially in the middle of the college basketball games, because both of the teams that I picked to win that ended up losing actually were winning for most of their games. Gonzaga was really close with UCLA the whole time. Gonzaga ended up losing that game 65-62. That's who I had picked, but UCLA came back to win it at the end. Gonzaga was only within 5 to 8 points for most of the game, but they were controlling it. It was a low-scoring game, so an 8-point lead in that kind of a game feels like a lot, and it felt like Gonzaga had a lead pretty much at that kind of a margin for a lot of that game. And same thing with San Diego State and Utah State. I picked San Diego State. They were at home, and Utah State hit a buzzer beater. They hit a buzzer-beating three. Well, maybe not exactly a buzzer beater, but a game-winning shot with maybe 1 or 2 seconds left. I think it was pretty much not their first lead, but it was maybe one of 4 or 5 times that there was actually a lead change in that entire game. San Diego State was up by as many as, I think, 18 points at some point in that game, led pretty much the entire game and led by a significant margin for most of it, but ended up losing that one, so I got that one wrong. And then the other two games, Memphis beat number 19 Ole Miss 87-70, and New Mexico beat Colorado State 76-68, much more straightforward. Struggled to kind of find a game to actually pick, especially because the Mountain West as a conference this year is down from last year. I know people will probably say, well, this is actually what that conference is every year, but I actually don't think that's serious. I don't think that's true. I think that they actually did have a really good year last year, despite some lackluster tournament performances from those teams. But this year, it's a down year in that conference, or maybe more of a regression in the mean year, you could say. It's just an average year there. They're probably only going to get 2 or 3 teams in the tournament if they're lucky. But Utah State and San Diego State, definitely those two. And then New Mexico, actually, kind of that last team on the border. And that was a good win for them to kind of go. It'll go a long way towards securing that potential bid, because Colorado State's really the only other team that's anywhere near that conversation at the moment. In the NBA, the Knicks beat the Magic, which I got right. Magic really injury-riddled, but they still won some games, including against the Knicks last week. So still worth picking their games. The Timberwolves beat the Rockets 113-112. That was the only game I got wrong. The Clippers continued the Warriors' losing streak. They beat the 102-92. And the Celtics beat the Pacers 142-105. All those games were on last Friday. And then in the NFL, the Bengals beat the Broncos 30-24 in overtime to keep their playoff hopes alive. The Eagles beat the Cowboys 41-7. The Vikings beat the Packers 27-25. And the Commanders beat the Falcons also 30-24 in overtime. The first and the last games, really important for playoffs. The rest of them, not so much. I guess the Vikings and the Packers, yes, in a sense, for seeding. And then the Eagles and the Cowboys, you know, it's a backup quarterback against a Cowboys team that had been playing better. So it was worth the prediction when I actually predicted it. CeeDee Lamb was still slated to play. And also, the rest of the four of the best teams in the league all played on Wednesday on Christmas. So couldn't actually pick those games this week. But overall, I thought I did fine. Maybe a little bit better in college basketball could have happened. And, you know, this weekend we are already seeing the start of conference play in the Big 12, in the WCC, in the Mountain West. So some interesting games coming up. The SEC also starts conference play actually on Saturday. So that'll come up with a bunch of huge matchups that I'll predict next week, and hopefully I can do better.
Okay, well, Patrick's predictions for next weekend will be posted on our social media, as always, on Thursday. Let's now turn our attention to college football, with a look back at last week's bowl game action and a preview of the second round of the college football playoff.
While there were some interesting games last week, there were also some uninteresting games last week. I think the main takeaway that you can have from all these games is that the ACC was not very good this year. But we'll start with that, with one of those games that proved that. East Carolina beat NC State 26-21 in-state battle there got chippy at the end of the game. NC State definitely had their fair share of opportunities. Letting a guy run for an 80-yard touchdown or 75, whatever it was, on a 3rd-and-10 play at the end of the game is probably one of the worst things you can do in a football game. And that did win the game for East Carolina, so a really, really bad play. But at the same time, they really kind of missed their opportunities early. This game was even pretty much in yards gained in the first half, but East Carolina was up 13-7. NC State missed field goal. They turned the ball over on downs. Out of their three possessions, it was literally touchdown, missed field goal, and then the turnover on downs. So you're not going to win a game when you can't capitalize like that. And East Carolina did capitalize on NC State's mistakes. Then you have Miami of Ohio, who beat Colorado State 43-17. This was an interesting game because, and I should mention, we didn't mention my college football predictions in weekend predictions, but that's because I'm telling up the overall predictions results, and we're just going to go with that and add that to the record because it always gets messed up when I try to add the record as I go along. So this was one of those games, speaking of which, that I picked an underdog when the favorite was definitely the other team, and it seemed to be that I thought Miami of Ohio had a better season than Colorado State, and it proved that, or they proved that in the bowl game with a dominant 43-17 win. Really low scoring in the first half, only 9-3 at the half, but then Miami of Ohio scored 20 in the third quarter, 14 in the fourth, only gave up 14 points, so of course ending up with that 43-17 margin. Then you have TCU, who just demolished Louisiana. That was a game that I honestly never even got to turning on. I was watching other stuff, and it was probably 21-0 before I even thought about changing the channel to watch that game, and it ended up 34-3. Louisiana scored the final 3 points of the game in the fourth quarter on a field goal. Nebraska was up 13-2 on Boston College at the half. I thought it was funny that they played both of the baseball stadium bowl games on the same morning, and the weather was terrible. But that was kind of an interesting choice to play both of those games, A, in the morning and B, on the same day. But Nebraska started up with a 13-2 lead. Boston College only scored off a blocked extra point that they took the other way. Nebraska went for it on fourth down a few times and faked a field goal because of the fact that their kicking game was really, really off. Boston College eventually actually scored their first touchdown of the game off a blocked punt touchdown. So a lot of special teams issues in that game, for sure. But Boston College capitalized on it to keep it close, and then Nebraska sealed it in the end, winning 20-15. And then UConn and North Carolina. UConn came out and dominated in the first half. They were up 24-7 at the half. North Carolina didn't really have a response. They won 27-14. Army Louisiana Tech was the same story. 21-3 in the first half. Army ends up winning 27-6. BYU against Colorado was it was one of the bowl games. BYU was up 20-0 at the half. Not the way you want to close out a season for a player, or for two of the Heisman finalists, actually. And that actually proved to be a theme. We'll see if that continues with Ashton Jeanty tomorrow, actually, but, or later today. But BYU won this game 36-14, completely outmatched Colorado in every phase of the, game. I mean, it just wasn't a close game whatsoever. Despite the fact that Colorado did have all of, pretty much all of its players, playing in that game. But BYU easily walked away with that victory and, you know, maybe cemented their argument that, hey, maybe they should have been in the playoff instead of SMU, who they beat early in the season, mind you. But then you have number 18, Iowa State, who beat number 13, Miami, 42-41. This was a game of no defense, as was kind of expected. Miami's defense just bad enough to let a kind of mediocre Iowa State offense score at will, and Iowa State's defense not quite good enough to stop a prolific Miami offense. Until Miami subbed out their quarterback, and Cam Ward didn't play in the second half. He broke the touchdowns record, and then he didn't play the rest of the game. And, you know, the pace slowed down in the second half. It was 31-28 at the half. Obviously ended 42-41 in Iowa State's favor. Very, very clear that Miami did not have their starter out there at the end of the game. Emory Williams was okay, but not amazing in the end of that game, and Iowa State won because of that. Then you have USC, who staged a comeback against Texas A&M for their second really exciting comeback win in Vegas this season against an 8-4 SEC team. The first time it was LSU at the beginning of the season. Now it's A&M at the end of the season. They were down 24-7 in this game and came back and scored 21 unanswered points to take the lead. A&M did score to take the lead of their own 31-28, but then USC stormed right back down the field. Jaden Maiava orchestrating some of those drives after really having a rough first half, and USC ended up winning 35-31. Then Arkansas beat Texas Tech 36-29. Really just a game of swings in that one. Arkansas started up 21-3. Texas Tech came storming back to keep it close at the half. It was 24-19 at the half. And then Arkansas came out with a dominant third quarter, made it 34-19, heading into the fourth, and ended up winning 39-26. Then Vanderbilt beat Georgia Tech 35-27. Some questionable calls that favored Vanderbilt in that game for sure, but at the same time, it was an eight-point game. I don't think one or two calls really would have changed anything because Georgia Tech scored a lot of their points late to come back in that one. It definitely wasn't necessarily really like a one-possession game the whole time. But Vanderbilt comes away with a winning season after all the complaining about, you know, can that team compete with the new SEC at all? They actually end up with a better season than a lot of teams, especially a better season than Oklahoma, who also played in a bowl game. They played Navy. They were up 14-0 at the end of the first quarter. Navy scored the next 21 points to take a 21-14 lead. And after after Hawkins led the team down, I said Elijah Hawkins because I'm thinking basketball, but Hawkins led the team down the court, or down the field. Well, now I'm really thinking basketball. Led the team down the field and scored a game-tying touchdown if they had kicked the extra point, but they decided not to kick the extra point and went for two instead. They did not get the two-point conversion, and Navy walked away with the 21-20 victory. Speaking of going for two, Pitt, they had the opportunity to go for two during the end of their game against Toledo. They didn't go for two from the one-yard line after a penalty against Toledo and went for the extra point to tie the game and send it into overtime at 30-30, and instead Pitt lost in sextuple overtime. That took me a while to come up with that word. I forgot about it for a second. But yeah, that was a ridiculous game. There's no reason why Pitt shouldn't have gone for two. They instead chose, or actually it was in the second over. It was it was in the first overtime. They chose to willingly go to a two-point conversion battle back and forth as opposed to just trying to get 1 yard to win the game all in their control, sudden death. I think that's an objectively bad decision. And they lost, and honestly, they deserve to lose for that. But credit to Toledo for having a really good season. They knocked off Mississippi State at the beginning of the year and now Pitt in this bowl game. So definitely one of the better teams in the group of five in terms of pulling off upsets. Then you have Kyle McCord, now the ACC single-season passing yards leader, record holder. 52-35, Syracuse beat Washington State. Just a ton of offense in that game. Washington State led it 21-14 after the first quarter. Syracuse put up 21 points of its own in the second quarter to take a 35-21 lead into the half and then closed out that game. Arkansas State beat Bowling Green 38-31 despite a heroic effort by Harold Fannin Jr., who's now going to be entering the draft. We'll see what happens with that. Definitely one of the best weapons out there in college football. Was barely behind Nick Nash, the Triple Crown winner, at wide receiver, but Harold Fannin is a tight end in the MAC, so he's definitely not supposed to have the same numbers as any receiver. And speaking of Nick Nash, his team fell in five overtimes to South Florida. Nash not playing in that bowl game, of course, but San Jose State lost 41-39 in five overtimes. Worth mentioning that in the first quarter of the game, it was 0-0. San Jose State should have scored the first touchdown of the game, but a player was walking into the end zone instead of really finishing out that play, actually got the ball stripped from behind, went through the back of the end zone for a touchback, and South Florida scored on the very next drive. So instead of starting up the game with a 7-0 lead, they had a 7-0 deficit. South Florida capitalized on that, and obviously in a game that went to overtime, a seven-point swing is a big deal. And then in the last two bowl games, you had Big Ten teams that I guess you could say choked, but, you know, close games throughout. But Rutgers, they lost to Kansas State 44-41. They started out the game pretty strong. Kansas State was having a lot of trouble stopping the run from Rutgers, and Rutgers actually led at the half 27-17. K-State battled back with 12 in the third and 15 in the fourth and ended up with that 44-41 victory. And then finally, number 19, Missouri, beat Iowa 27-24 yesterday. Missouri making two 50-plus yard field goals in the second half, actually in the fourth quarter, both of them, to win that game. Held Iowa to like 110 yards, I think, in the entire second half. So a strong performance by that defense, and also stopped a fourth and one QB sneak that would have kept a drive going that could have allowed Iowa to either tie the game or win the game, although Missouri might have been offsides, but it's over now, and I think Missouri probably deserved to win that game, especially with how many injuries they were dealing with to their receivers anyway, to still even have an offense by the end of that game is pretty crazy.
All right, well, let's now turn our attention with a look ahead at the four games in the second round of the college football playoff. Let's start with the only game being played on the 31st. That's the Fiesta Bowl that features Penn State, the number 6 seed, against number 3 seeded Boise State.
Yeah, this is an interesting game. We were different on this game before the playoffs started. I think now we're probably more aligned. I actually liked what I saw from Penn State a lot in their first game, but I'll still stick with my Boise State pick because I don't really feel like I don't think a one-game sample size against SMU, I guess, the best way to say it can sway me that much. So I'm going to stick with Boise State. I felt like they could win that game in the first place, and I still feel like they can. You know, if Boise State's just able to capitalize on a few of those plays early that SMU wasn't. Obviously, Penn State at home in Happy Valley is very different from Penn State playing in the Fiesta Bowl. And I'm not saying that Penn State has any past failures in the Fiesta Bowl. I have no idea off the top of my head. But I do know that Boise State has enjoyed a lot of success in the Fiesta Bowl. And it's a bowl that they love playing in. And I know that doesn't really matter. But I think that having Ashton Gentry on their team, and I don't think that Penn State realizes that, you know, they might be able to actually stop Boise State's line from creating that much separation and movement. But Gentry doesn't need separation and movement. He just needs to really have, he just needs to get back to the line of scrimmage, and then he'll do the rest himself after contact. So I think Boise State comes out, and I think they actually win this game. I do see why you would pick Penn State, and I think I'm probably more on the fence about it than I was originally, even though it was definitely a close game to begin with. But I'm picking Boise State, and I'll just stick with that pick just because it's what I had before.
Yeah, and I pick Penn State because I think that Boise State's pretty one-dimensional, and that one-dimension Penn State is used to going up against both in practice and in the Big Ten. I also think that this may be a case where the layoff hurts teams if the team that played more recently isn't dinged up, and I didn't think that the SMU game was going to be a physical game from Penn State's perspective. So gave Penn State the slight edge in this game. Had to pick a bigger upset, I guess, a decent sized upset. So this is the one that I saw. I figured Boise State's styles make fights, and I think their style plays to Penn State. So let's now turn our attention to preview the Sugar Bowl, the team that will play the winner of Penn State, Boise State, and that is Notre Dame against Georgia. That's actually the last game of the four being played. This one on January 1st at 8:45 Eastern.
Yeah, I am picking Notre Dame in this one. We already know that I was on the fence, and if you heard the little soundbite, I took probably a minute to decide that I wanted to pick Notre Dame over Oregon just to be a little bit contrarian too, but I think it's a good pick. I think that I value that team a lot, especially on defense, and I think that after the first game against Indiana, I became even more confident in that pick, and there's no reason for me to turn back now. I just don't think that Gunnar Stockton is going to win this game in his first career start. I just don't see that happening. Against a very physical team. I think Georgia is obviously one of the more physical teams in the playoff, probably the second most, but I think the team they're behind is Notre Dame. I think maybe you could throw Texas in that conversation too. They're really physical as well. But I really think that that's the one thing that normally Georgia can kind of overpower teams that are not in the SEC with is just sheer physicality, and they can run the ball a lot. I don't think they're going to be able to run the ball that well because I think Notre Dame's going to key on it. They're going to make Gunnar Stockton beat him. And if he starts actually playing well, then they'll just let Georgia try to run the ball because Georgia has the 15th best rushing offense in the SEC. So that is not a strength of this team whatsoever. So Notre Dame's either going to gear up and make Gunnar Stockton beat them, and then if he starts doing it, they'll just let Georgia run because they don't normally do that very well anyway. So I do think Notre Dame has a style advantage in terms of the defense versus offense matchup. And I don't necessarily think that Riley Leonard and Jeremiah Love are going to be able to just run all over Georgia. But I think they have just enough wrinkles in that offense and enough versatility that it'll keep Georgia on their toes enough that they won't be able to stop it enough to account for the fact that they have a really lackluster offense this year.
Yeah, and I picked Georgia before I knew the Carson Beck, Gunnar Stockton situation. But I'm going to – and also before I saw how weak the SEC appears to be in bowl game play – relatively speaking, and before I saw how impressive Notre Dame was against Indiana. I totally on the fence on this one. I could see it going both ways, but I'll stick with my gut here and go with the Georgia Bulldogs. Maybe the playoff experience will pay off here. So let's now turn our attention to the top of the bracket, is at least the way it's laid out on the printout that I've seen, and move to the Peach Bowl, which will be the first game on January 1st, featuring Texas, the number 5 seed, against number 4 seed Arizona State.
I don't think we're going to spend too much time on this one, because I think this has been revealed that, you know, if they were to do this playoff in a typical seeding of just doing, you know, the 5 conference champions, but in the order that they were ranked, and leaving it like that, this wouldn't have even been a first round game, because Texas would have probably had a bye to the quarterfinals, and Arizona State would be the second worst team, they would be the second worst team, only ahead of Clemson. In the playoff, you could make the argument Clemson even should have been seeded higher. Clemson was competitive against Texas, and, you know, Cam Scatabu was great. Sam Levitt's had a great season. One of the better stories in college football that he's even on a field right now is Michigan State didn't even let him get any snaps. And all 3 of their quarterbacks transferred out, actually, from that season last year, all at different places. But Levitt really, really thriving for Arizona State, but I just don't see it happening. I mean, Texas, I think, has the better defense. Despite Quinn Ewers' various struggles throughout the year, I think they have the better offense. I liked what I saw from their running game against Clemson a lot. And I don't think that Arizona State has as good of a defense as Clemson does. And Texas put up 38 points in that game anyway. So Texas pretty easily.
Yeah, all you need to know about this game is what the committee thinks. Normally Georgia would have been slotted to as the number 2 seed to play in the Peach Bowl in Georgia. But I think that the powers that be recognized that they didn't want to have the worst game of the year, the worst game of the playoff, be the last game played at night and have everybody turn off. So they put what they think is going to be the worst game in the 1 p.m. slot, the first slot on Saturday. I think this game is not going to be close. I think Texas is going to just kind of walk all over Arizona State. So let's not pay much attention to that. Let's move to the 4th playoff matchup, which is the second game of January 1st, in its traditional 5 o'clock Eastern time starting time. It is Big Ten versus Pac-12. No, it's Big Ten versus Big Ten. Number 8 seeded Ohio State against number 1 seeded Oregon in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, I think I know that there's the rematch effect here. There's definitely some thoughts of mine that say, look, Ohio State is playing better than they did, or better than they were playing at the time they played Oregon earlier in the season. And Oregon obviously won that game, and that was at home, and it was already by a slim enough margin, pretty much the slimmest of a margin you can get, a 1-point game where Ohio State literally lost because they didn't get one extra second on the clock from Will Howard sliding too late. But at the same time, I think Oregon can play better. I don't think they played their best game in that game, and I also think that they're a lot healthier than they were at that point in the year. I don't actually think Ohio State has improved that much over the course of the season. I don't think they've gotten worse either, but they have lost more players. Oregon has gained more players from injury. And I think that when you factor those two things together, it'll account for all the differences that Oregon and Ohio State could have, from Ohio State going back and looking at what they did wrong in that first game, and Oregon not having as much to look at since they technically won the game. Although in a game that close, I think they probably each have some things they want to address and some things they want to keep the same. But I think Oregon is the healthiest it's been. I think the bye week will help them a lot. And I think they do win this game, despite the fact that Ohio State probably played their best game of the season last week. I'm not over the fact that they played their second worst game of the week of the season 2 weeks earlier than that. So it can go either way. But if you're taking, you can shorten the sample size to as much as you want. But if you extend it just a little bit, if you go to just last game, Ohio State looks great. If you go just one game beyond that to the loss to Michigan, all of a sudden they don't look so good anymore. So I think you can't really look at anything in isolation like that. And I think that you have to look at the whole season. I still think Oregon's the better team, but not by that much.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I think this would be the most compelling game of the 4 games. I originally penciled Oregon to win the whole thing in when I looked at this bracket. Maybe I'm doing an emotional hedge here and thinking Ohio State is going to win. That way, if I'm wrong, I'm happy. So I could see this game going either way. If Oregon wins this game, I think they're winning the national championship. And if they don't, it opens the door for somebody else. I'll just stick with I'll pick Ohio State. That way, if I'm wrong, I'll be happy. Let's now turn our attention to the NFL with a review of Week 17 action.
We will start at the beginning of the week with the Chiefs against the Steelers. The Chiefs finally beat a team by more than one possession. I know, it's crazy. And, of course, it happens against a playoff team, not when they play the Panthers, not when they play, I mean, I could name a bunch of other teams that they played that they couldn't blow out, but that's not worth any time. They started the game out with a 13-0 lead in the first quarter, ended up scoring the last 13 points of the game as well, and won 29-10 over the Steelers, who really have not gotten any offense going recently. Wonder why. The Chiefs, 15-1, they clinched that one seed in the AFC. They will not be playing players next week. Mahomes battling an injury anyway, so even if they hadn't clinched the one seed, but they clinched the division and maybe the one, either the one or the two seed, maybe they already make that decision, but for sure at this point, not going to be playing their players. And meanwhile, for the Steelers, at 10-6, they're now a game behind Baltimore for the division lead heading into the final week of the season. Of course, that's because the Ravens demolished the Texans 31-2. It doesn't matter for the Texans because their division kind of blew itself up and they had already clinched that division anyway. And they're at 9-7 on the season and they're kind of locked in. They're now locked into that fourth seed officially. But, you know, what matchup they're going to get, you can't just play and assume that other teams are going to beat other teams and set up the matchup you want. So you just kind of have to go out there and play the games as is. That being said, the Ravens are playing the Browns next week. They're winning that game. Plain and simple, they are winning that game. So that won't be an issue for the Ravens, especially after they demolish the Texans. And then when you look at the Texans, I mean, this is a team that's so bad that they are actually underdogs on the road at Tennessee. Obviously, it's because they're probably going to be resting players and they don't have anything to play for. But, you know, even without their players playing, I really feel like they still should be given the chance to win that game. But, you know, it, again, doesn't matter for the large scheme of things. The Ravens are a lot better overall. The Texans have really, really fallen off as the season has gone on. It looks like there is really just a big three in the AFC with the Chiefs, the Bills, and the Ravens, and those are the three teams to beat for sure. Speaking of the Bills, they beat the Jets 40-14. They started out this game with a 33-0 lead before the Jets finally got on the board. No thanks to Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers had a bottom 10 QBR game of all time, or bottom 20 game of all time, I think, out of nearly 10,000 games. So once again, I repeat, it does not matter who is coaching that team. It does not matter who the coordinators are. Their problem is with the guy who is calling the shots and does not know what he's doing and is not playing anywhere near the level that he's played at for most of his career. Aaron Rodgers had a great career. That career should be over. And frankly, it probably could have ended in the middle of the season. But the Bills win 40-14. They moved to 13-3. They will be the two seed. They're locked in there because, well, the AFC kind of lined up nicely. The division winners were 15-1, 13-3, 11-5, and 9-7. So very easy to figure out the seeding there. And obviously just talked about those other two division winners. So moving on to the NFC action, the Lions beat the 49ers 40-34 on Monday Night Football. That sets up a matchup between them and the Vikings for the number one seed next week on Sunday Night Football, although it doesn't matter because the Vikings and the Lions, no matter, after the Vikings had beaten the Packers on Sunday, it meant that the Lions-Vikings game next Sunday would decide the number one seed. But an interesting battle there between two 14-2 teams. It is crazy to think that one of those teams is going to walk away with a divisional win at 15-2, and the other team is going on the road to play Tampa Bay or Atlanta. And I guess technically it could be the Rams. I don't know what the tiebreaker looks like between the Rams and the Buccaneers, but most likely will be Tampa Bay and Atlanta, depending on what happens next week. So that's kind of an interesting thing to look at. Of course, drops the Packers to 11-5, which means they are tied with Washington for the sixth seed, and Washington has the tiebreaker over Green Bay because of record in conference games, which they have already secured. So that's kind of an interesting thing to look at, because if they end with the same record, it means that Washington will be the 6, Green Bay will be the 7, which would mean that they'd take on the Eagles, which is that's a daunting task to have to go on the road and face the Eagles after you were basically in contention for your division all season long. And there will be two division winners with worse records this season. But speaking of those divisional winners and the other teams that are in the NFC, I'll start with the Commanders, who beat the Falcons in overtime, 30-24. A great, I want to say, Michael Penix playing great football. Good move by the Falcons to go to him instead of Kirk Cousins at the end of the season. It's going to be interesting, though, if they do make the playoffs, if the Bucs somehow lose and choke that seeding. I don't think they're going to lose to the Saints, but if they do, it'll be kind of interesting to see what would happen with Michael Penix in his third career start, but it's his first, but it's a playoff game. I mean, that would be crazy. But at the same time, don't see the Bucs choking it. They won 48-14 against the Panthers. So clearly they are taking their business seriously. And of course, the other thing that was important with that Commanders game, because of a strength of victory tiebreaker, the Commanders win over the Falcons actually clinched the division for the Rams in the NFC West, who had beaten the Cardinals 13-9 on Saturday night. Of course, they won because Trey McBride had a pass doink off his head that was then picked off by Akello Witherspoon at the end of the game, sealing the game, the victory for the Rams and the division eventually after three other teams that were completely unrelated to them had to win, and they all did. Or three of like six teams, and they all did, or four of six teams, whatever it was. But all the teams that needed to win did for the Rams to win their division, and they did just that. Then going back to Saturday for a second, the Bengals beat the Broncos, talked about in weekend predictions. That was the game that kept the playoff hopes alive for actually three teams, for Indianapolis momentarily, for the Dolphins and for the Bengals. The Broncos were the only team that could get eliminated from the playoffs after the Chargers beat the Patriots, which they did 40-7. But that game was really meaningful. Had the Bengals even tied that game, the Broncos would have been in the playoffs instead of the Bengals, or instead of the Colts, or instead of the Dolphins. Worth mentioning, the Dolphins did win. They still have a chance to make the playoffs. The Colts did not. So they will be out of the playoffs. They moved to 7-9 because they lost to the Drew Lock-led New York Giants. But the Dolphins are still alive, and the Bengals are still alive in 8-8. Joe Burrow playing amazing football right now to lead that Broncos team. But that was a great game for Cincinnati. They now move on this week to take on the Steelers on the road. But the Steelers pretty much locked in to where they will be. I guess technically they could be playing to host a playoff game, so they'll definitely be... They have stakes in that game, I guess is the point. So that'll be kind of interesting. Although I actually think that they play... Yeah, they play, I think, the later game out of them and Baltimore, so they actually might know. Yeah, their fate will be sealed for the playoffs before. If Baltimore wins, they'll be at 12 wins. Pittsburgh can't get two wins in one game, so Pittsburgh will know what seed they're in pretty much. And I don't know if it'll necessarily be worth playing for them. They would only be playing just to eliminate the Bengals from the playoffs, which I don't really think is that important of a cause. But we'll see what happens with that. It's kind of an interesting thing to look at. But the Bengals kept their playoff hopes alive. Of course, the Broncos play the Chiefs, but they already have the one seed clinched. That's a home game. The Broncos are favored by 9.5. But you never know. Carson Wentz might play the game of his life. I mean, we know that he's capable of leading really good teams. He's capable of it, but he doesn't always play like it. So we'll just have to see what happens in that one. And then finally, a game that was meaningful earlier in the week ended up meaningless. The Seahawks beat the Bears 6-3. But now, of course, that doesn't matter with the Rams clinching the NFC West.
All right, let's shift gears and move to basketball action, starting with the most significant college basketball games from the past week.
Yeah, not many games that were that important this week. There were 2 days in a row where nobody played. Actually, 3 or 4 days, there was not a single game. None on Christmas Eve. None on the 2 days after Christmas. But on Christmas, Nebraska beat Oregon State 78-66 in the Diamond Head Classic Championship game. The last MTE of the year. That's the last time I'll be saying that phrase. Unless we're talking about brackets later in the year, which obviously will happen. But Nebraska, speaking of brackets, getting a big win there. Oregon State, probably one of the better teams they've played so far this season. Nebraska hasn't had a ridiculous schedule. Their win over Creighton doesn't look as good as it did at the beginning of the season, et cetera, et cetera. Oregon State on the borderline of quad one on a neutral court. I think they're 52nd in the net last I checked. So right on that borderline. But Nebraska gets a good win. Then there were all the games I talked about in predictions. UCLA beat Gonzaga. That's a really big win for the Bruins heading into Big Ten play. They already have that win over Oregon as well. So two wins over really, really good teams for UCLA with that North Carolina loss sandwiched in between. So a good stretch for them. Not a great stretch, but a good stretch for the Bruins. Definitely going to be in the top 20, maybe top 15 next week. But then you have Memphis, who beat number 16 Ole Miss 87-70. Again, talked about that in weekend predictions. A really good win for Memphis. Closes out their non-con slate with a bunch of good wins. Utah State went on the road to beat San Diego State. We talked about that. And then Big 12 play started on Monday night. It kicked off with Kansas State beating number 16 Cincinnati 70-67. Cincinnati really, really, really lacking in terms of signature victories. This wouldn't have been a signature win, but it's one of those kind of mid-tier wins that you need to get if you don't have signature wins. Cincinnati has basically played four competitive games all year long. Georgia Tech is the best team they've played outside of those four games, and Georgia Tech is horrible. But they lost at Villanova, who's an okay but not great team. They beat Xavier by 3, but that was at home, and Xavier's been kind of up and down this year. And then they beat Dayton by 7, which was their signature win. So those two were good results, but the Villanova one, not so much. And then now they lose this game. So it's kind of hard to evaluate them 2-2 in really their four notable games this year. And Kansas State's not even close to a tournament team right now. They have been playing terrible all season long. So that is not a good loss to take if you're Cincinnati at all, despite the fact that Kansas State definitely has the talent and the reputation on their side, especially under Jerome Tang. They're now 16-3 at home in Big 12 games under Tang. But this season is not the Jerome Tang seasons of the past few years. So a much rougher loss to take. But then, rest of that conference, number 14, Houston beat Oklahoma State 60-46. Arizona beat TCU 90-81. Both of those teams taking care of business as you would expect. And then number three, Iowa State beat Colorado 79-69. The interesting thing about this game is that despite it being the conference opener for both teams, they actually played each other in the Maui Invitational. Iowa State ran away with that one. It was, I think, tied at the half or within 5 or 10 points at the half, and then Iowa State just came out and demolished Colorado in the second half. But Colorado playing much better here at home. Had the lead in this game pretty late, but eventually lost. I think they were up 65-64. It was probably their last lead. But basically exactly what Iowa State did against Iowa. Pretty similar profiles of teams, two bubble teams there, Colorado and Iowa. But Colorado not able to close it out. Then you had number 19, Gonzaga, who played Pepperdine on the road. A close 89-82 victory, but a victory nonetheless. And finally, San Francisco beat Santa Clara 97-94 in overtime. A win that San Francisco needs to get. If the WCC wants multiple teams in the tournament, they're just going to have to hope that basically two of their top five or top six teams just dominate the rest of the league. Which is going to be hard, because I don't know how that happens when they all play each other. But between Santa Clara, Gonzaga, St. Mary's, Oregon State, Washington State, San Francisco, you basically, if you're the WCC, are hoping that two of those teams sweep the other kind of middle-of-the-pack teams that are near bubble teams and then sneak out one win against Gonzaga in there and then hope that that's enough to make the tournament. There actually are more good wins to go around in this conference this year because it's not just Gonzaga and St. Mary's as tournament teams and then kind of San Francisco and Santa Clara as the borderline teams. Now that they have Washington State and Oregon State, it's really helping out. Santa Clara getting better has helped that a lot. This conference is actually a pretty interesting one to watch. But that San Francisco win was huge to start that season. They start the season 2-0 in West Coast Conference play. And definitely look like a tournament team. If the season were to end today, I think they'd definitely be firmly in that conversation. That win going a long way towards deciding that.
All right, finally, let's turn our attention to the NBA.
Starting in the East and starting with the Cleveland Cavaliers, which it feels like we've done every week of the season, but the Cavs are still on their heater, 28-4. They have won 7 in a row now. Checking in on that win percentage, and if it's enough to break that record, it's now at 71.75 wins if you took their win percentage and took it over 82 games. So they're close. They're pretty close to that Golden State record, but we'll see. I don't think they're going to do it, but it's definitely within the realm of possibility. Then you have the Celtics, who are 5 games back at 23-9. They're only 5-5 in their last 10, though, so they've slowed down a little bit, but I think we all know what that team is made of when they really, really kick it in a high gear every game. And the Knicks, they, speaking of kicking it in a high gear, have won 8 in a row themselves, the longest winning streak in the Eastern Conference, not the longest winning streak in the NBA. There is one other team with a longer streak. We'll get to that later. But the Knicks, third best record in the East at 23-10. It is the fourth best record in all of the NBA. 5.5 back of the Cavs for first. Easily kind of driving a wedge between those three and the rest of the conference, which has been pretty common recently, honestly. The Cavs, Celtics, the Knicks, and then normally the Sixers are in that group as well, kind of as the big four. And then the Heat, depending on the year, have been in there. But pretty consistently, it's been the Celtics and the Bucks. And then more recently, it's been the Cavs in that group. And now the Knicks starting to join that group. Did a little bit last year in that big four. But they have created some separation. The Magic are currently in fourth. They're 4-6 in their last 10, though, and we know tons of injuries plaguing that team, but they're still 20-14. And I would expect them to stay afloat. They'll at least be somewhere in the play-in bracket at worst-case scenario by the time that Paolo Banchero comes back and then eventually Franz Wagner, et cetera, et cetera. But then you have the Hawks at 18-15. They've won four in a row to get to this point. They're above 500 in the playoff picture at the fifth seed. Good season so far for them, defying some expectations there, although it is a weak East, albeit. But the Bucks are there at sixth. They've kind of come down to earth again. They've lost two in a row. They're 5-5 in their last 10, just playing average basketball right now. Nothing terrible, but not great either. At 16-14, they're 11 games back. They're also tied with the Heat, who are 6-4 in their last 10 and are at 16-14. Playing three more games in those teams and ending up three more games behind them are the Indiana Pacers, who are 16-17 on the season. They are 7-3 in their last 10, though, so they've played better recently. It's kind of getting that position. And then you have the teams that, you know, one of these three teams really doesn't deserve to make the playoffs, but will. And then the other one is, well, a big team. Then the other one just shouldn't make the playoffs and won't. But the Bulls, the Pistons, and the Sixers are the three teams I'm talking about. The Bulls, they've won two in a row. They're 5-5 in their last 10, but they're 15-18 on the season. The Pistons, 5-5 in their last 10, but they're 14-18 on the season, which means that they're tied with the Philadelphia 76ers, who are 13-17. They have finally figured it out. They have won four in a row. They're 8-2 in their last 10, as they should be, despite starting the season 5-15, probably worse than that if I went back further, but just excluding those 10 most recent games. After that 5-15 start, they're now up to 13-17. Like I said, play 500 ball until you get healthy. Really kicking into high gear when you get actually fully healthy, and now it feels like they have gotten back into the swing of things, despite now not having Jared McCain. But Tyrese Maxey is here, Joel Embiid is here, Paul George is here. So that's enough to win games. And they are starting to win games now. Then you have the Nets. They're 12-20. They just traded for D'Angelo Russell. They traded away Dorian Finney-Smith in that trade. He was the big piece. Shake Milton also a bench piece that they traded away. They got some picks there. They also traded away Dennis Schroeder recently. So the Nets blowing it up early in the year. Never seen that before. But they are 12-20, far back from a playoff spot, even though they're two games. But with the talent that they've given up, they are a lot more than two games out of it in reality. And then you have the three teams at the bottom. The Hornets at 7-25, the Raptors at 7-25, and finally, the Wizards at 5-25. The Raptors have lost 10 in a row. The Hornets have lost 8 in a row. The Wizards, they've only lost 2 in a row. Then in the West, you do have the longest winning streak in the league. It's the Oklahoma City Thunder. They've won 11 in a row. 26-5 is now their record. They are five games ahead of the second-place Grizzlies, who are 22-11 on the season, 7-3 in their last 10. The Rockets are 21-11. They are 5.5 games back of the Thunder. They are 6-4 in their last 10. Then you have the Mavericks, who have started to cool off a little bit. They're in the fourth seed. Currently, Luka Doncic, though, injured for at least a few weeks. They're 20-13 on the season, 7 games back. A team that's surging recently is the LA Clippers. They are 19-13, 7.5 back. Just one back of Dallas, though, for that fourth spot. Three games in a row they've won, 6-4 in their last 10. Then you have the Nuggets, who are 18-13 at 7-3 in their last 10. And the Lakers, who are also 18-13, they are 6-4 in their last 10. The Timberwolves are currently in the 8th seed, 17-14. They've won three in a row after losing on Christmas Day. Or actually, no, they won on Christmas Day. What am I saying? Including a Christmas Day win over the Mavericks. And then you have the Spurs. They are 16-16. Wemby put together his signature performance. He really, really arrived on the national stage on Christmas Day. A 40-point, 20-rebound game with everyone watching. One of the highest viewership days of the year for the NBA, of course. And he put on a show at MSG, of all places, too. So he has fully arrived, and his team is here. They're in the 9th seed, and that also means that they are tied with the Golden State Warriors, who are 3-7 in their last 10. Look really, really bad after a good start to the season. I remember when they were in the 2 seed. They were there for a decent amount of time. But now they are way down here in the standings. Speaking of way down here in the standings, you also have the Suns. They are 15-16 despite all their star power, 3-7 in their last 10. The Kings at 14-19 finally won a game last night, but did still fire Mike Brown before they finally snapped their losing streak at 6 games. They fired him after the 5th game in the losing streak and then lost to the Lakers. Had that rebound last night. With the victory against the Mavs, but the Mavs really shorthanded. And then finally, you have the Blazers at 11-21, 3-7 in their last 10. And the really, really bad teams in the West, the Jazz at 7-24. and the Pelicans at 5-28, who have lost their last 10 games.
All right. Well, that wraps this edition of the 4th and 24 podcast. Please be sure to check out our next podcast, which will be on Tuesday, January 7th, where we will look back at Patrick's weekend predictions, have another look at college football playoff action and bowl season, look at week 18 in the NFL and take a peek ahead at the NFL playoffs, and we will talk again about basketball with another weekly roundup of both college basketball and the NBA. In the meantime, please be sure to check out Patrick's additional content, including his weekly college basketball bracket updates, which will be posted weekly on Wednesdays throughout the season, and his picks for next weekend's games, which will be posted, as always, on Thursday. All of this content is on our social media handles at 4thand24. That's the number 4, THAND, the number 24, both on Twitter and Instagram. And some of that content is on our website, 4thand24.com. Thank you for listening, and Happy New Year.